the Adirondack Theater Festival is such a special theater company offering new, interesting, fun, and world premiere works of theater. Their season this summer includes everything from Judy Garland to Avenue Q to, of course, Georgia O'Keeffe.
Mark Fleischer is the producing artistic director of ATF and has been since 2007. He joins us to tell us about the upcoming productions, including their opening production, Heartbreaker, 2 months with Judy Garland.
In 1968, when he was 26, songwriter John Meyer met Judy Garland. The next 2 months were an emotional roller coaster, but his life was changed forever. Inspired by his acclaimed memoir, Meyer brings to the stage the true story of his romance with the star whose flame was dying and how he attempts to rescue her from her self-destructive demons. John Meyer and the show's director, Michael Bush, also join us, as does the woman who stars as Judy Garland, Christine Andreas. And again, Mark Fleischer is here as well. Thank you all for being with us. What a pleasure.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks for having us.
Mark, let us begin with you as far as putting the season together. Opening night, Wednesday night.
Actually, official opening night is Thursday night.
Thursday night.
Did you see me? I just had a minor heart attack.
Your first performance is Wednesday night.
Yes, we have a preview. Previews are a very important part of especially new work because the final element is the audience. And so the directors and writers watch an audience very closely on a preview performance, just fine-tuning it. I always say it's 99.9% what the critics will see the next night.
And learning where the laughs are. If any.
Yes. Well, and plenty of laughs, lots of, you know that. They're there.
I'll laugh.
So,
we're laughing.
And yes. So you seem remarkably calm, a little panic, no panic with you. You're great. You're all set.
After 6 years, you know. No, this is the exciting time. You know, it's myself and one other employee for the rest of the year. And to have, you know, we have over 60 artists that descend on Glens Falls that we house and transport, and from interns to staff. It's a incredible operation, and this town has been so welcoming to me and to everyone who comes. And to have a theater, a professional equity theater that does new work and takes risks, is just amazing.
Now, theater people sometimes have the reputation of being a little bit wacky. Is that true?
Only in the good way.
I actually say crazy.
Only in the good way.
Okay, you know that we have to be a bit crazy to do what we do.
We have to live outside the box.
We do. And, of course, being crazy and doing a project about Judy Garland just seems appropriate to me.
So when you become Judy, how does that happen? Is there a method to it?
I don't really try to become her because I love her too much. Yeah. You know, I just try to embody whatever energy she might have in a particular situation. So, and the remarkable thing is having John Meyer. So I'll go, okay, how did she get angry? Did she yell a lot? Did she? You know, how did she manipulate? What did she do? How self-pitying was she in this moment? And so I can sort of find the degree of her, because I am not her. So I have to find how I'm different.
So let me back up just a little bit. So you found this work how, Mark, in the sense of bringing this to Glens Falls?
I found it through Michael Bush. Michael and I knew each other probably 2004, 2005, we were at the O'Neill Theater and Conference Center, or whatever the official name is. Michael was there working on the Cabaret Conference, and I was there helping the Playwrights Conference. And we've kept in touch. We've run into each other in halls and rehearsal rooms over the years. And Michael called me and said, I have this really interesting piece, and he pitched it to me. And we happened to have an open slot, and I read John's book, and we talked about the script. And the one thing I love to offer, and our audiences love offering, is people a risk, a chance. You know, I joke that we're the R&D of the American theater up here, sort of entrepreneurial sort of spirit. And
a world premiere.
Yeah, world premiere.
So for you, Michael, how did you come across John and John's book?
Well, this is a very interesting story. John introduced himself after a performance of a musical that I had done at the New York Musical Theater Festival. I've done 8 productions there. I think I've done more productions there than any other director. But he introduced himself afterwards, and he said his name, and I recognized it. And he said, can I contact you about a project of mine? So I get an email from him saying, I'd love to talk to you about a play I've written based on a memoir I wrote called Heartbreaker. Now, I didn't put 2 and 2 together, but I live in the Hudson Valley, and my house is stone, and I have to get reception in a certain room, so that's the guest bedroom. So he goes, I wrote this book about Judy Garland called Heartbreaker, and I paused and I went, I'm looking at it right now. Okay, it literally was sitting by the bed because I love the book, and I put books out in my guest room for people. And you can just open this book and start reading; it'll draw you
absolutely
right in.
Absolutely.
You know, so that started a journey that John and I've been on now for
over a year,
and we worked on the script, and we decided that we wanted to do a workshop in December, and we threw some casting ideas out, and I came to him, and I had just gotten to know Christine, and I just saw her as Judy Garland, and we did this workshop, and we got a really positive response, and I said, I want to go off somewhere this summer and really realize it, and Mark's name came up, and it's just one of those projects either happen, the path gets cleared and they happen easily, or they don't, and this one just sort of fell into
everything goes into place.
They take on their own life.
But
so let's introduce John Meyer into this equation, because you know, I started reading the book, and the subtitle of the show is My 2 Months with Judy Garland, and you think to yourself, well, you know, can you make a book out of spend with somebody. Well,
what do you think?
Damn.
It's Judy Garland.
That's a hell of an 8 weeks, isn't it?
You know, it's almost a moment by moment examination of the experience. And
this is a larger than life, isn't
yeah,
it?
That's right. Well, as Judy says, I'm 47 years old, and with my life, that makes me 412. And it, you know,
but it seems in the book, and I get the idea from what I've heard about the show, that it never stops. I mean, she was just constantly, there was always something.
She
always
never slept.
Well, that was the key. She never slept.
I've always said the story is about a man who, after 2 months, had to get some sleep.
Right.
You know, that ultimately, that's as long as his stamina would last. And like the great songbird that she was, while he finally did collapse, she flew off somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the storyline.
Now, I guess everybody has one question that they all want to ask, and that is, what if she had lived? In other words, mm-hmm. was there a way...
No, that's the question you ask about George Gershwin. Yeah,
okay, but I'm not asking about George Gershwin. Right. I'm asking about him, about her. So was there anything you think that could have saved her?
No, she was, well, the cliche is too far gone, but the subtext is that she actually preferred the position of the defenseless waif who was trying to scramble her way back into some position. But if she ever got to that position, she would make sure to destroy it.
Could you get the sense in the book that it's that out of control is her control?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's her way of controlling the situation.
Nice way of putting it. Yep.
You create an impossible situation so you can try to survive it until you don't.
How much did you know? I mean, look, we all hear stories. So you're in the business, you hear stories. So when you come to work with her, what did you expect?
Well, I had been primed by the fellow who introduced us. His name was Richard Stryker. And he said, well, you know, this is really a very nice 47-year-old lady. I said, really? He says, yes, and we're putting a new act together for her, and you have a song. Could we get the two of you together to hear, show her the song? And then later he told me, well, you know, her voice is gone, so she's going to need a lot of rest to recoup. And it seemed that she was really down and out because she only had $5 in her purse at the time that we met. And she was dependent, as Tennessee Williams says, on the kindness of strangers. She was living with this fellow who had no relation to her, only because he offered her a place to stay. And 30 minutes after meeting her, she took my hand and said, let's get the hell out of here. And she left with me, and we never came back. And that's how volatile she was.
And there was a... But you were sort of put in this position to revitalize the career, right?
That's right.
To rescue it,
and he
I
did.
Guess.
I did to a certain extent, and then she made sure to destroy it.
And again, in 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
What he did in 2 months is remarkable.
Yeah.
What now, he set
did,
up.
Did you keep notes?
Of course.
I mean, was it a daily sort of diary thing? I mean,
that's what the book is, a diary. I kept notes throughout, realizing that I was in an amazing experience. And then over the next few years, I collated those notes and wrote the book.
Now, I know this is going to sound wrong, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
Was it exploitative for you to be having a friendship and also to be keeping the notes?
Oh, you know, I've taken a lot of flack over the years from people who say this is just an exploitative kiss and tell. Mm-hmm. Mm. You know, but I think if you read the book, you'll see that it's been done with great love.
Exactly. I mean, look, exploitive would be what was just on Broadway, would be what you read in all the trashy papers. That's exploitive, and that's what most of the world knows. What intrigued me about John's participation in all this was that you could go to the font, you know, the well. You could actually find the humanity in Judy Garland, and that's what this is. It's her humanity. It's very damaged humanity at this point, but it's her magic and her madness, not just her madness.
It's also something that you don't see regarding Judy Garland, and I think it's because John did fall in love with her. And what this is that's different from the play Into the Rainbow that was just there or anything is this is a love story. That's what is at the root of it, is a love story. And because of that, I think both of them are shown with a real sense of humanity and dignity. So it's, we're not sweeping the truth under the rug,
yeah.
But it is a love story. And I think that's the real something. It's something I'd like the people coming to know, that they're coming to see a love story.
This really is a coming-of-age story of an idealistic young songwriter, me, who fell in love with a major star and tried to rescue her, failed, but learned a lesson. And that's basically what the show is and what the book is.
Because he found his identity, more of his identity, through her appreciation of his gift. They validated each other in a very interesting way.
I never thought of it that way, but that's good.
But it's very validating. I mean,
you both learned something from each other, and you began to own your powers as a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's very evident in the show because the score is by John. And these are original songs, some of which that she sang, some of which he's written for this production. And it is remarkable because there's a truth in it that you don't see elsewhere.
Now, if she had lost her voice somewhat during this time, do you have to do that?
You know, I distress. I mean, you can already hear. I mean, I'm a soprano, but you would never say Marlena, you know, today. Yeah. I'm Harvey Fierstein right now. So I indicate. I mean, you don't really want to hear me singing through the show. If you watch her, you can YouTube her singing on the Merva Griffin Show, John Songs.
Sure.
And, you know, okay, it's somewhat distressed, but there, it's still like, oh, wow, Judy Garland, you know, that connection to lyric and... You know, so I'm not going to distress it as much. The process itself has done enough to put my voice in a somewhat compromised position. So, you know, you go with it. I mean, if you don't, it's an entertainment, too, the show.
How long was it after? I'm sorry, go ahead, John.
I was going to say to Al, because it's been bothering me for the last 8 minutes.
Don't let that happen.
I'm glad you're keeping track.
You said to me, did you take notes? Actually, what I did was after I fell down sick, and during the recuperation period, I tried to reconstruct everything that I could remember. So the idea of me going through the experience and repertorially jotting down notes is false.
So that would be a healing process for you because you finally stopped and recovered, and he was in a hurricane. He was in a tornado.
It was like an expiation.
Yeah.
How soon after the expiration of your relationship did she pass? How long?
Like 5 months.
Yeah.
She got involved with another fellow. His name was Mickey Deans. And in my estimation, he didn't supervise her closely enough, and she OD'd on her drugs.
He was a drug dealer, and he gave her what she wanted.
When, what is this like when you see, Michael mentioned the workshop, but for you, and you see Christine, and you see her doing this, what is that experience like for you?
Well, it's funny, you have to put on two hats and detach yourself from the experience as a writer and just see how the material is going to play to an audience. So it's a fascinating double-edged experiment for me.
Well, the director sometimes has a problem with the writer. I mean, they sit in the same room. Sometimes we've interviewed so many people, Joe and I, that that somebody has been thrown out because they're a pain in the neck or another place. And
that's me.
No, listen, I'm married to a writer.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm
so you really know what this fun
no,
is.
But, no writer that I've worked with is more difficult than my husband. And if he's hearing this right now, I'm in trouble. But that's okay. All right. And I came from the Manhattan Theater Club, where I spent 25 years working with some of the great writers. Like, I mean, I worked with everybody from Stephen Sondheim to Harold Pinter. So I think a vigorous dialogue, and it's my job to take the helicopter viewpoint in trying to sort of point out with John what the dramatic arc of the piece is. So
you've never had to tell him to quiet that.
No, if anything, we encourage him to speak up, because he's been great about sitting in the back of the room. But there's something about having the person there that this happened to, when we can go, let's go to the source. And, Christine has done it all through the rehearsal period, because I'm a storyteller, and that's what I think my strength is as a director. I've wanted to make sure that we hit the points, and that, I always say that the best test of a good play is, does it reach its destination? There was no doubt when I first read this that this play reached its destination. What I had to sort of point out along the way with John is where maybe some of the bumps, I think plays sometimes walk off from their through line. But it's been a wonderful collaboration. He's great. And
walk off from their through line.
Huh?
You said walk off from their through line.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I call the motor of the play, what emotion, what choice does a character make that moves you from one scene to the next?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's been very, very clear about that. But I think it's also hard for a writer where it really happened to him, even though it was many years ago, he has to step back and have a kind of...
A double vision.
You have to be able to evaluate your life in a clear, precise way, and who of us can do that? So it's
only me.
You're the only human who can do that.
Yeah.
We are out of time, woefully out of time. In fact, we're a couple minutes over. But I just real quick want to bring this back to the Hyde and O'Keefe for a moment, Mark, because you have two very cool things going on. One is the play Filming O'Keefe, which is written by Eric Lane, directed by Martha Banta, mm-hmm. who, oh, by the way, founded the Adirondack Theater Festival. Yeah. And did this come out of this exhibit?
It was kind of kismet. I found out about O'Keefe living with a Stieglitz on the estate, had no idea. I went to someone and said, did you know this? And I'm like, yeah. You have to tell me these things. I'm new. So we got Eric, and he started working on it. Then I had heard through Aaron Coe and David Sefford, the previous executive director of the Hyde, that they were looking at this exhibit, so we tried to make the timing work out. It's a very modern play. It's about a 17-year-old kid living on the former estate today, making a digital cinema project about O'Keefe and Stieglitz. And that's how that came. And then we've done partnering with the Hyde on other past exhibits with our shows when they can tie in. Because I do believe that sort of city event is a really exciting sort of thing for Glens Falls and any community, that the art groups are talking to each other and those experiences.
And Martha's such a great director.
And to have Martha's her first time back since turning over the reins to me in 2007.
That's great. Excellent. Yeah. And then Far Away Nearest One is a wonderful reading of letters that you have, and some powerhouse names there, too.
The Stieglitz and O'Keefe wrote over 5,000 letters to each other. Sarah Greenough, who's the expert on the letters at the National Gallery, has edited them for us. We have Carolyn McCormick, who listeners may remember as Dr. Olivet on Law & Order.
Loved it.
And her husband, Byron Jennings, who was recently in Lincoln and a major Broadway actor, they're coming up and they're going to read an edited version. It won't be all 5,000. they're going to an evening of letters for two nights. And it's ending the season. It's something we're doing with a Hyde together. And I think it's going to be a very special event.
August 9th and 10th. And you can find out more information about Heartbreaker and all of the great shows coming up as part of the ATF season by going to atfestival.org, atfestival.org. Mark, Christine, John, Michael, thank you so much for being with us. It's a great pleasure. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. We appreciate you guys coming up to Glens Falls.
You're listening to the Roundtable Podcast from the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls on WAMC.